This pre-recorded show is furnished by the Los Angeles County Department of Military Veterans Affairs.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Kathleen Pichet. You're our host for today. Welcome to You've Served, You've Earned, the radio show that talks about vital issues in the military and offers solutions to problems you and your loved ones may have in service, transitioning, or once you re-enter civilian life. We're here to help families, too, and we'll offer resources for those that need them. The show is brought to you by the Los Angeles County Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. If you're a veteran or family member and need assistance, go to youservedyouveearned.com. You can fill out a form, and one of our accredited veteran service officers will contact you with more information. Today, we're going to discuss a really super important topic. I think it's on everyone's minds, especially at this time of year. We'll be discussing homeless veterans in Los Angeles, and we have two very special guests, like the best. We have Steve Peck. He's a Vietnam-era Marine and also CEO of U.S. Vets. We also have Malcolm Harvey. He's a social worker and formerly homeless veteran of 10 years who now works for U.S. Vets as a social worker. So, Steve, tell me about U.S. Vets. How did that organization get started?
Our organization started in 1993. Our founder is Judge Harry Pregerson, a former federal appeal court judge, another Marine, World War II, wounded in the Battle of Okinawa and World War II.
Wow.
An extraordinarily compassionate man. He knew that there were, at that point, tens of thousands of homeless veterans in Los Angeles. There were 24,000 homeless veterans in Los Angeles in 1993.
Wow.
And there was not a significantly a large program, a permanent housing program for them to go to. So they were going into substance abuse treatment or mental health treatment at the VA, rotating back out to the neighborhood, relapsing, coming back in. So it was a kind of a revolving door. And so he helped us start our first project, which is in Inglewood, Westside Residence Hall. And the goal was to bring them in from those programs. We had direct referrals from the VA, help them with their mental health counseling, with their substance abuse treatment, and get them a job and get them back out in the community. That's how we started, and we've since grown to—
Yeah, full range of service, housing, which is very important also, of course.
We understood very early on that aside from the housing, we needed to help them with employment assistance, with substance abuse treatment, and with mental health counseling. All those things needed to go together to stabilize them so that they'd be successful once they left
us. Right. So since then, your organization has grown exponentially, I mean nationwide, and you're housing so many vets. How many veterans are you housing now?
We have about 3,500 beds across the nation. That's within our walls, and then we provide services to veterans in the community. So it's another 2,500 or so. So we're on any given night, we're housing about 6,000 veterans.
How are you managing the need for all those services? It's a huge job.
As you can imagine, we have changed as the demographics of the population have changed. So when we started in 1993, 70% of the veterans that we were serving were Vietnam vets, and many of them wanted to head back to employment. So that's why we started our employment program back then. These days, there are more homeless veterans with higher acuity, which means they have more mental health issues, more substance abuse issues, physical issues. So the need for permanent housing has grown hugely. And we've had to professionalize our staff to provide the kind of mental health counseling that they need. We've expanded our employment program. So we've really tried to keep up with the demographics to provide the services that they need to leave homelessness behind them.
Right. I've heard that the more recent veterans, the OAF and OIF veterans, have had more deployments than in any other wars in our country, and so then they are like triple traumatized or have even compounded issues with their families and all kinds of things.
We have a number of young vets. About 10% of our population now are post 9/11 veterans. We have young vets who have been deployed 4 and 5 times, so they're 6 months back, 6 months. So that is extraordinarily difficult for them to handle. Contributes to their post-traumatic stress, contributes to high divorce rate. Among women veterans, there's an extraordinarily high suicide rate. they've been exposed to combat. They've also, many of them have suffered from military sexual trauma of one kind or another. They come back, they get divorced, they're a single mom, and they're just trying to deal with all these mental health issues and take care of a young child at the same time. It's really, really challenging.
Really difficult, that sounds like. How many veterans, well, how many homeless veterans are there in our area in Southern California?
Last count in L.A. County, there were about 3,500 homeless vets. Now, that's down from 24,000 in 1993, so we're doing good.
Wow.
But we were, for several years, we were stuck at about 4,000. This last 2 years, it's creeped down a little bit. And I think that's a result of an effort on everyone's part, the city, the county, the VA, nonprofits like U.S. Vets, to really provide the kind of services that we need to help them get off the street. We have homeless prevention programs, helping them get to, you know, gain employment before they become homeless, providing them mental health counseling before they become homeless. So that's our new effort. We want to expand those homeless prevention programs so that we're not continually filling the bucket. We have to stop the inflow before we can really reduce the number significantly.
Right.
So, Steve, what happened that what was the major factor in reducing the homeless population, the subpopulation, if you will, of veterans from 24,000 30 years ago to 4,000 now? Because we have in the high 60,000 of people who are experiencing homelessness now, and that's everybody. Mm-hmm. If it were 24,000, mm-hmm. that would be a significantly larger number. What happened?
I attribute that largely to the VA expanding their homeless dollars. So the grant and per diem program was the original homeless program. That's a transitional housing program, bringing veterans off the street, providing them intense case management services, helping them either return to employment or get a disability payment. And then right behind that was the expansion of permanent housing programs. So those two things together, one, getting them off the street, two, moving them to permanent housing, and in many cases, permanent supportive housing, so with rental assistance and case management, so that, you know, we're getting them off the street and we're keeping them off the street and getting them into permanent housing.
Collaborative model, like a lot of people like the collaborative and a lot of organizations working together probably also are assisting that.
And the city has stepped up with housing dollars. The county has stepped up providing a lot of mental health. So kind of everyone looked at this problem and said, this is horrible for our city, and especially horrible for the veterans who are suffering from homelessness.
Right. I remember when I started at DMH, oh my gosh, 20 years ago, that we weren't even seeing veterans.
Yep. No. And we...
county mental health.
No. And we've... I'm the president of our state group, and one of the first things we got together and did was talk to DMH and said, they're citizens of your county. You can't turn them away. DMH was sending them directly
to
the VA. A veteran would walk into a DMH office. They say, nope, we don't do that. Go over to the VA.
Right.
So that doesn't happen anymore. So we've really all gotten together to deal with this problem.
Exactly. That's exactly what they used to call it. I don't know if they call that anymore. The same thing.
And significantly this year, in fact, just recently, I think the VA removed certain eligibility barriers for voucher eligibility. Is that correct?
It is. It used to be that the VA would only serve honorably discharged veterans. Come to realize that many of the veterans out on the street have general or other than honorable, and another than honorable can be a whole bunch of different things.
Mm-hmm.
There were a number of women who were sexually abused, ushered out of the military with a less than honorable discharge, and they're suddenly not eligible.
Wow!
And it's completely not their fault.
It's a double whammy.
During the Vietnam War, there was a lot of a racial conflict going on. Black veterans were being discharged with another than honorable because, you know, their sergeant had made some racist slur, and they got into a fight, and so the one who suffers is the one who needs the help the most. So there was a lot of issues like that should not have happened, and so now the VA is providing services to other than honorable. Everyone really but a dishonorably discharged veteran are eligible for services.
Tell me tell us why, how you got into this. Why is it important to you?
I was a documentary filmmaker before I did this, and I had a particular interest in homelessness. I'd done several films up in the Tenderloin in San Francisco, and in about 1989, a friend of mine said, you know, there's a lot of those men who are homeless are veterans. And it turned out about 30% of the homeless men at that time were veterans. And that really struck me. I thought, wow, you know, these are guys that I used to serve with.
A lot.
In Vietnam. So I did a short film about a group of homeless veterans living on Venice Beach, kind of hanging together. Several of them had really significant PTSD. They were disillusioned. You know, they'd been in and out of programs, not treated well at the VA. So I did this film and became an advocate for homeless veterans programs here in L.A. and ultimately switched careers and became an outreach worker at the West L.A. VA. So I did that for several years. So I've really experienced this from the bottom up.
From the ground up, yeah.
And that time was just invaluable, really getting, you know, talking to hundreds or maybe even thousands of veterans about how did you become homeless? What was the incident that really threw your life off track? And, you know, for every veteran, there's a different story.
Right. And we're going to hear Malcolm's in a few minutes for sure. Malcolm's with us.
Made me realize, you know, this is just, we have to individualize our treatment. You know, there's no cookie cutter solution. You really have to talk to every veteran as an individual and determine what's wrong, what went wrong with him or her, and what can we do to help remedy that.
Great. Amazing. So glad that you're doing this kind of work. We're listening to 790 KABC, You've Served, You've Earned. My name is Kathleen Pichet. We are here with the CEO of U.S. Vets, Steve Peck, and Malcolm Harvey, who is a social worker for U.S. Vets as well. Malcolm, you're here, but tell us your story. You were in the Air Force.
No.
Oh, oops.
Navy.
Sorry, Navy. Oh. I got that confused.
That's okay. I'll let you slide.
My dad was in the Air Force.
Good thing you didn't say that to me. I'm a Marine. I would be even more offended.
Well, my father was Air Force, so I'll give you credit for that. Okay, so a little bit about my story. First of all, let me thank Steve for inviting me to be a part of this. He could have chosen thousands of veterans, you know, either veterans that are housed on our sites or veterans that actually work for U.S. Vets. He could have chosen anyone. He chose me, and I'm honored to be a part of this. Every time you do this, Steve, you allow me to tell my story, and it allows me to take my hardship and make something good from it. So I really appreciate you for doing that, okay?
Great.
And thank you, Kathleen, for inviting me as well.
You're so welcome.
So to give you the proper context, you need to know that I come from a loving family. I grew up in Pasadena, which is not that far from here. Seven kids. I'm the oldest. My grandmother, she was the matriarch of my family. She's 5 foot tall, 250 pounds, a little round lady. And what she said went. Our family was full of love. We were poor, but we really didn't know it. And we always had a home. My entire life, we always had a place to stay. So in my senior year of high school, me and a few of my friends were mistaken for some rival gang members, and we were shot up. I was shot in my stomach. A friend of mine who was 15 at the time, he died from his gunshot wound.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my goodness.
So my grandmother came to my hospital room, because I was in the hospital for about 3 weeks from that incident, and she begged me to change my life. She thought it was something that I did to cause it to happen. It wasn't. I was running around with some questionable folks at the time, But that's the first time I had seen her that emotional, that hurt, because she was a very strong woman. She had been through a lot in her life. She was a maid her entire life, and so she was very very grounded. I never really saw her get emotional. And when she came in my hospital room, she saw me with all the wires and tubes and machines beeping, and she just kind of broke down, and she made me promise that I would change my life and do something different than I was doing at the time. So when I got out of the hospital, I immediately went down to the U.S. Navy recruiter's office, and I signed up. Because it was really the only option I had. I didn't, you know.
How did you think of that? Did you just thought?
My father was Air Force and my grandfather was Navy. And funny thing is, they both tried to talk me out of enlisting.
Oh.
Because they had, you know, my father was served during Vietnam. So he had a really different experience in the military, you know. Because a lot of veterans during that era, you know, had a lot of difficulty. Especially when they came home, right? So, They had their own perspective as far as the military, but I didn't have a lot of options. So I'm thinking, I don't want to become a statistic. I don't want to be another, you know, person shot down before I graduate from high school. So I I chose my grandmother's route. So I enlisted and came aboard USS Constellation, the first ship I'd ever been on in my life as an aircraft carrier, 6,500 men. And I met this guy, his name is David Hampton. He became like a brother to me. And about 3 years into my enlistment, I saw him burned to death on the flight deck right in front of me. And I didn't really understand at the time what a thing like that can do to you.
Yeah, what happened? Was it just an explosion?
Well, the flight deck is kind of a dance between aircraft and personnel. So you have to be very aware of where you are at all times. And I guess something got confused, and he was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And then the airplane turned after blast, and he just happened to be too close, and he burned. Ooh. And so gradually I started to change. My personality changed. I was a 4-0 sailor to that point. You know, I was an E-5, and I wanted to retire. I wanted to stay in for 30 years. I loved what I did. I loved the camaraderie. I loved the mission. I loved the purpose that we had. You know, I loved defending this great country, you know. But I became too sick to serve. And so shortly after my 11th year, I was medically discharged. Actually, I was given an OTH, an other than honorable discharge, because my behavior had become so toxic. And so the symptoms associated with PTSD were mistaken for being subordinate or, not heeding the orders of my superior officers, different things like that. And so I was written up.
They thought you were misbehaving.
Exactly. So just as Steve had spoken to, that exactly happened to me. Thank God I'd served more than one enlistment. So I had the honorable discharge in my pocket from the first enlistment, right? So thank God, right? So so I had an honorable discharge, and then I had the other honorable discharge. It's kind of how it happened.
So you went in, and then you got out, and you went in again.
I went in and got out and went in again. That is correct.
So then once you got out the second time,
yeah.
What was that downward trajectory from getting out of the service, ending up homeless? Mm-hmm. How did that happen?
So in the military, they teach you to be independent and to stand up on your own two feet and to not ask for help. And so when I got out, even though I was really sick, I was reluctant to, I didn't ask for help. And I went home I was unemployable because no one would put up with my behavior at the time, how I was acting. No employer would have put up with that. So I was unemployable. I went to stay with my family, and my behavior was so erratic and so dangerous. I walked around with a handgun all the time. And even my family became scared of me, and they asked me to leave. And so that's how I became homeless. My family wouldn't even, they wouldn't even let me stay with them. And I understand it. I didn't understand it then. I was really hurt then. I felt like they had betrayed me and abandoned me. But I understand now, of course. And I've understood for a long time. But I was homeless. I was homeless for almost 12 years.
Wow.
Good Lord.
Long Beach. I lived on Gage in between 5th and 6th for a long time. I had a tarp there. Only thing with being at Skid Row is very dangerous. And I saw things happen to people when I was there that... We talked a bit about that, Kathleen, where people will do some really, really cruel things to other people when they're so desperate. And when you put a lot of desperate people in a close proximity with each other, you'll see a lot of bad things. And I saw the worst in humanity during that time.
Yeah, it sounds terrifying. Yeah. I mean, and then when you're in that space, it's so hard to get out of it.
Yeah. A lot of people get stuck.
Start using drugs. And if you didn't have a mental health issue, you probably did after that.
Didn't already have PTSD, you will.
Yeah,
from that kind of
most
experience.
Definitely, and I believe that we all have a certain threshold for trauma, and when we reach that threshold, whatever comes after that kind of tips the balance, and that's what ultimately makes us sick. I think at least that's what happened to me. And thank God for U.S. Vets, though, because after being promised untold times that by different social workers like myself.
So people were coming out and talking to
you? Yeah, outreach. Mm-hmm.
You were being outreached too, but what prevented you from engaging with those people?
Yeah, initially it was a trust factor. I didn't trust people. That's part of PTSD is, you withdraw from people. You don't trust people. You don't want to get close to people because if something happens to them and you get close to them, then you're going to be traumatized all over again. Exactly.
Right.
It's a trust factor. You don't trust people. Mm-hmm. And so gradually that started to kind of dissipate. But then when I started interacting with social workers and they made promises that, hey, I'm going to do this for you, that for you. And then when it didn't come true, then I became kind of disenchanted with them. And then every time someone would come, I'm like, oh, here's this another person coming with like some, you know, BS story of what they're going to do for me. And they're not going to, they just want to use me.
They'd lost credibility.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So eventually I just kind of got stuck out there like a lot of people do, you know, and a lot of people die out there. You know, I saw a lot of people. I saw many people take their last breath out there. A lot of people.
So how do you survive that? How do you survive 12 years on the street?
Oh, my God. I wish I knew.
Like day by day, minute by minute.
Yeah, exactly. Because I ask myself all the time, like, I kind of have survivor's guilt a little bit because I see so many people, so many good people that have left here before me. And I think, you know, all those years out there, I kind of have regrets that I kind of wasted my life when I was out there doing that. I could have done a lot of good during those 12 years, mm-hmm. even though I was sick and I have a reason for doing that. I still have that regret, right? So, I don't know.
Thank God you got help. So tell us what made the difference for you to actually like move forward and get help.
Okay. I love that question most of all because that's where U.S. Vets comes in. And I love talking about U.S. Vets. Because it saved my life, you know? So it was on my birthday 7 years ago. And this guy, Pedro, I knew him from U.S. Vets before. Because I had known about U.S. Vets, but like I said, I didn't want to be housed among a lot of other people. I just didn't want to be in that situation. I'd rather be on my own where I could, you know, I could defend myself. So, but on my birthday, Pedro came and he said, man, why don't you come over and U.S. Vets is different now. And I tell you, if we are not able to help you, I will personally let you come over and stay at my house, is what he told me.
Wow.
And so I went over there.
It was many people do that.
Not really. And he's still a dear friend of mine to this day. Still works for U.S. Vets. So.
Awesome. You got some good people, Steve.
Yeah, he really does. So I went there that Friday, late on a Friday. Think about that for a minute.
I know exactly what that means because I'm a social worker myself.
Right?
Yeah.
But do you know what they did for me? They, just like Steve said, they customized their entire treatment of me. It wasn't a cookie cutter experience for me at all.
Yeah, they said, this guy needs help. He needs everything. Let's like, do it.
2 days in, I was taking phone calls at the executive director's office. And they had me doing all, they gave me purpose.
Working.
Yeah, they gave me purpose.
That's so important. People need to be responsible and take part in their recovery. Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. And then Steve became my mentor, which is a great thing in my life because when someone like him, you know, shines his light on someone like me, you know, I feel like I need to like step up. And so
it's kind of like when someone says, I believe in you.
Right.
You can do it.
Right.
I mean, you're like kind of like, well, now I got to do it.
You want to justify their belief.
Right. Yeah.
And then it's
exactly.
Him. And then it's him, too. So
right.
it makes it very. So I had to go back to school and get the master's degree. And I wanted to take after his footsteps. And so that's
your
what
master's
I'm doing.
Degree.
Yeah. I have a master's degree in social work.
Awesome. Yeah. And are you helping homeless people now?
Actually, I'm a VTS. I'm a veteran talent specialist. So I help veterans find gainful employment.
Oh, well, that's very important. It's part of the whole formula, right?
And that's really because the entire veteran crisis is a result of a failure to successfully transition.
Right. Mm-hmm.
If you don't successfully transition from uniform service to civilian status, you can end up on the street.
Such a huge, huge piece.
And there's a number of programs, exactly, that deal with transition, expiration, term of service, ETS, Skill Bridge. What is U.S. Vets doing in the transition space?
About 6 or 7 years ago, we realized that the employment money we had was specifically for homeless veterans. If a guy who had a bad paying job or a part time job really wasn't making ends meet came to us, we didn't have the funding to help that person. So we would do what we could, but we decided that we had to create another program, a prevention program for those kinds of guys. Or we'd go to a job fair. Boeing would have, you know, a bunch of mid level jobs, and none of our homeless veterans who really had high acuity, you know, mental illness, substance abuse, were qualified for those jobs. So we wanted to reach out to veterans who were heading toward homeless, had low-paying or part-time jobs, and catch them before they became homeless. So we raised a bunch of private money.
Perfect.
And are helping. That's a career development initiative that that Malcolm works
with. Amazing. Well, this is such a fascinating topic, and we're kind of running out of time, but I want to thank you. What would you say, Malcolm, to anyone out there who might be listening who might be in the shoes you were in? That kind of desperate point.
Yeah, I would say don't believe the hype. Definitely get some help. And there are really great organizations out there that will help you. U.S. Vets is definitely one of them because we're the largest purveyor of services for veterans in the country. But there are a lot of others. Make sure you check them out. Make sure they're legitimate.
Yeah, there are
some. Yeah, there are some that are not. But
not good.
True.
But, yeah, don't never give up. The same passion that you took to the military, invest that in yourself.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Steve and Malcolm, for being here today, and thank you to our studio audience for listening. If you know a veteran, active service member, National Guardsman, someone in the reserves, or a family member of someone in the military, I think we all know someone, an uncle, cousin, friend, or neighbor that has been in the armed forces, please let them know assistance is available. Even if you don't think you're eligible for benefits, you can get help from an accredited veteran service officer at the LA County Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. Lots of vets come in looking for driver's license designation, which makes it easier when it comes to providing proof of veteran status. And then they find out that they're able to receive many other services like education assistance, help with jobs, housing, and health care, including mental health care and compensation. Thanks for listening to You Serve, You've Earned, and check us out on youserveyouveearned.com.
This pre-recorded show is furnished by the Los Angeles County Department of Military Veterans Affairs.